All right, hello and welcome to the Should Be Known podcast. I am Clayton Pixon. We're on the 14th episode. The title of this podcast is They Are All Wrong. They Are All Wrong. You'll see why. On this podcast, we talk about some great puzzles of the world. On the Should Be Famous podcast, previous to this podcast, we talked about gravity and acceleration. I had a hunch that they were the same thing, which I believe Einstein had that same hunch. Well, I know he did. He talked about it, and he came to the conclusion, well, I think we came to the same conclusion. He came up with a theory called the general theory of relativity and the special theory of relativity. Those are two different theories. What I came up with from that investigation was that it seems clear to me that gravity is nothing more than acceleration. Acceleration caused by the bend in space-time that all mass creates, or that is associated with all mass, however that goes. Why does mass create that, or why is it associated with, why along with mass goes this bend in space-time? I don't know if we know. I don't know. I don't know that anybody has really figured that out. Of course, Einstein made his famous equation with that. But we don't really know why it's associated, but it is. Of course, they've posited this dark matter theory and dark energy. I'm not sure what the difference between them is, but basically to account for what seems like gravitational phenomena in space, but they don't see any matter there to create that phenomenon. So they posit this thing called dark matter, which, what is it? Well, nobody's ever observed it, so it's just a name, dark matter. It's just a complete speculative, postulative entity. May not exist, but something, and that's the name we have for it right now, I guess, something is causing these gravitational phenomena in space. It's like pulling on stuff, but we don't know what is, like gravity. And I'm not sure what dark energy is, but I think it's related. And it's just about as real as dark matter is, if that gives you an idea. So, as you can see, I still am interested in that discussion. But the point is that we figured something out. That gave me some confidence to know that we can figure out stuff in this way, by thinking about it over and over and zeroing in on the answer. So, this is a variation, by the way, on Keep My Feet, a song I wrote years and years ago on the guitar. It's good on the guitar. I have a new recording of it. It sounds good. It's not released yet because I don't have background or harmony vocals. I kind of don't like to call them background vocals because I don't like to put them in the background a lot of times. If it's a good singer, I like to have them just as loud as me or the lead singer. So there's a giant puzzle of the universe, which was kind of resolved with what we call the Copernican Revolution. And you know what I'm talking about. It's where, I guess, most people figured the stars and heavenly bodies, meaning the stars and planets, I guess, were making their orbit around the Earth. And when you try to account for the way some of those were moving, I guess, namely the planets in their orbits, well, it sure made a funny pattern in the sky. And it was hard to explain when you imagined everything going around the Earth, right? Very hard to explain. People tried to explain it, but it was hard and not very elegant. What does elegant mean? Elegant means simple. So some great thinkers, seems a little like common sense, but they were going against the grain. Kepler, Copernicus, and Galileo, not necessarily in that order. I'm sorry, I can't remember the order at the moment, but they figured that it would be a lot easier to explain if these things were going around the Earth, right? And they met resistance in the world by saying that. And Galileo hadn't went on house arrest. I don't know what the deal was with the other ones. Sorry, I don't know all my history that way, but I know that they met resistance. The idea didn't take hold in the general community for, I want to say, a couple hundred years, at least. That seems like a long time to us. Seems like a long time to me. But it was, I guess, a great obstacle getting people to think differently. And I don't know if that was more the established academia and the church and everything, or if it was more the common people, or how that went, but it was hard to get it to be the accepted prevailing theory. And my understanding from reading Thomas Kuhn's book, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions, is that that's commonly the case, that it's very hard, very difficult to get the prevailing theory to shift to something totally different. And there's great resistance, and the new theory is usually come upon and promulgated by somebody who's somewhat outside of the field. I think he might have said somebody young, too. Well, he did say that. Relatively young. But it happened, and there's no turning back. Now we know much better, and there's no turning back. So we're talking about puzzles. I just talked about a couple. The one regarding gravity and acceleration, and this one with astronomy, the Copernican Revolution. And then this one with general relativity, and I guess special relativity by Einstein. So I believe that psychology has some big puzzles in it. Philosophy has great puzzles in it. I've been reading my old textbook in philosophy, and it's been pretty fun. It's called The Great Conversation. It's by Norman Melkert, and it's pretty good, I guess. I have a major in philosophy, of course, and so I've had an intro, you might say, to philosophy. And this is one of my intro to philosophy books. The more I learn about philosophy, the less I feel I'm an expert on it. But it did teach me how to think in certain ways. And it did introduce me to certain patterns of ideas. And I'm grateful for that. And I have this interest in psychology. I minored in psychology. I don't feel like I'm an expert on that either, really. But there's this little section of it that we've been talking about regarding self-deception that I think is particularly enlightening, and which explains a lot, which other theories kind of don't even go there, and they can't explain it. Cognitive behavioral theory talks about how the thoughts we have are erroneous. Many times we have these patterns of erroneous thoughts. You know, you're not good enough, you're not worth anything, the world is going to end if this happens. You know, thoughts like that, that are quote-unquote unreasonable and quote-unquote unuseful. But I would say there's more than that. It's more than just unreasonable and unuseful. There's a deviance to them. There's an untruthfulness to them that is not just a random error. I don't know that cognitive behavioral theory has an explanation for why we have these patterns of thoughts and why these particular errors tend to occur over and over. what errors, the ones that I just said. You're worthless. You're not worthy. Your world is going to end if such and such happens. Those are what we talked about earlier, right? The lies of depression and anxiety. So why do those thoughts keep coming to us? What's driving that? And one thing we talked about earlier was that, well, they are lies, right? And they're as if, quote unquote, as if we had an enemy seeking our misery. Specifically seeking our misery. Not just some random error in our thoughts that might make us happier or, you know, equally as whatever we are, but specifically calculated to make us miserable and less effective. That's what those lies seem like to me. They're not random at all. But I don't know for sure if that's what accounts for their nature exactly, that somebody is seeking our misery, or if there's something else that can account for it. You know what I mean? We're looking for an answer to these questions. I'm not here acting like I have the answers. I'm telling you straight up I don't. But I'm also telling you that I have some answers, I believe, and synthesizing these things, I believe we can come to some greater understanding than we have. I don't want to make this overtly religious for any specific reason, except that I want to be able to use whatever I have in order to get to the end that I'm seeking. I do want to talk about this puzzle in psychology. I'm not sure what it is and how to parallel it with this one with astronomy, the Copernican Revolution, but I feel like that's a good one. I mean, people had already figured out many of the orbits. Before the Copernican Revolution, they'd probably figured they could use the information they'd gleaned previous to that to figure out the orbits of stuff and what was going on and the different stars and the constellations and even the planets, even though they didn't get how they were making these patterns. Once they turned things on their head and had this revolution, they were able to understand it better. But all the work that was done before that wasn't wasted, right? I like to think that. So in the same way, I like to think that the work that's being done in psychology isn't wasted completely. I don't want to throw out everything. I just want to add maybe some light. And I'm not the first person to come up with self-deception. I don't know who talked about it before Terry Warner. I learned it directly from him. He had done some great work in my mind on self-deception and how it happens, kind of the mechanism of it. He believes that we betray or go against the feeling of right and wrong that we have. The source of that feeling we may differ a little bit on, just because he says, he would say our sense of right and wrong comes from other people and other kind of things around us. But he did say it. He believes it ultimately comes from God. Although other places he seems to say that it just comes from other people, and he says there's nothing mysterious about any of this. And maybe it's not as mysterious as we think, but I see it as coming from God and less maybe from other people directly. Anyway, you might say, oh, minor difference, Clayton. Why are you even worrying about that? Well, we talked about that in a previous episode. There's some implications, I guess, but in a way, who cares? It still comes, we're still going against what we feel is right. I guess the other thing is he felt like every instance that we do that is kind of sin. That makes me a little uncomfortable saying that, because I believe And he would say this too, we learn the traditions of our fathers, quote unquote. We learn from other people how to react to things, and even a child will do this, and we both believe that a child is incapable of sin. But I would say, well, a child can self-betray, though. A child can be self-deceived. So how is that possible if it's sin? So, be that as it may, self-deception is, I believe, a great missing link in psychology. Great missing link. It accounts for this pattern of our thoughts. Well, I thought you said it was a lie, Clayton. Yeah, I did say that. So, somewhere we need to make this connection between it being a lie and it being a result of what we go against. Not sure what that is. Not sure how to explain that. Yeah, I'm not sure how to account for that. That's okay. We're working on that. So I was going to have a great point to this podcast, this episode. I still am going to make it. That is that there are many philosophical questions. What's a philosophical question? If you ask me, I will tell you a philosophical question is at least oftentimes a question that has no answer, no resolvable answer, because the question is framed wrong in the first place. The question can be debated for millennia, and nobody will find a satisfactory answer. Because why? Because the question is framed wrong. The question's wrong. It's the wrong question. Sometimes we ask the wrong question. Sometimes the assumption we have embedded in our question is wrong. What about that astronomy question with the Copernican Revolution? The question is, how do these heavenly bodies make their way around the Earth in these strange patterns? Embedded in that question is the fact that these heavenly bodies are making their way around the Earth. They're not making their way around the Earth. The Earth is making its own way around, you know, the sun and everything else, you know, the pattern that exists. So that's how that question's wrong. Let me read you some philosophical questions. They're fun. You don't think they're fun? I'll prove to you they're fun. Listen to this. Let's see. A search comes up with 202 philosophical questions. 105 philosophical questions that will make you think, blah, blah, blah. I can't read the rest. 65 deep philosophical questions. 140 great philosophical questions to ask. 30 deep philosophical questions. 5 philosophical questions that will blow your mind. Nope, not that instance of the browser. Philosophical question. Okay. 8 great philosophical questions that we'll never solve. Okay. This is by Gizmodo. Author of this article is George Dvorsky. Okay, here's the questions. Why is there something rather than nothing? Is our universe real? Do we have free will? Does God exist? Is there life after death? Can you really experience anything objectively? I don't know if this is the best list. What is the best moral system? See, that's a good example of my philosophical question. Because there's no, embedded in that question is the assumption there's a moral system that's the correct one. What if, like I'm saying, there is no moral system? Every single circumstance is a little bit different and could be different. You can't make general rules that will apply to every circumstance. That's what they're talking about. That's a moral system. You make a rule that applies to every circumstance of that kind. And then you can just make a system, you can codify it, and you just have to follow that, and then you're good. Well, that's not how it works. Why? Because every situation is different. Whatever God commands is right. Okay, we only got to number 7. What are numbers? At least some of these obviously follow the pattern that I was talking about. The question itself is wrong. What's the best moral system? Can you really experience anything objectively? The answer is no, but that has more to it. It's asking what we can know and how we know stuff, and not understanding really, in my mind, that everything's based on faith in this life, at least. I mean, we walk by faith. You don't experience anything objectively, directly, but you still know stuff. You can know stuff. I say, okay, is there life after death? Yes. Does God exist? Yes. Do we have free will? Of course. Is our universe real? Yes. But the question is, how do we know that? How do you know you're just not a brain in a vat, or that we're not in a computer simulation, that we just think we know all this stuff? Well, it's not a useless question. Not a useless question, I don't think, at least. My wife would say this is all bunk. It's all a bunch of nonsense. And that's one reason I like being married to her. She's got a great sense of what's a bunch of nonsense. But I think it's useful to appreciate the question still. And then 1, why is there something rather than nothing? Okay, well, I'm not going to try to figure out all these today. Wouldn't be unfun to do so sometime, but let's not worry about that too much. I guess as I read that list, I was kind of hoping for those questions to be more along the lines of my pattern. Some of those, part of the problem, I think, is that list. I mean, the question, does God exist? You can get an answer to a question like that. And we've talked about that already, too. You can get an answer. You just need to ask God. And he'll answer you. I know that because I've done such. I know a lot of people believe that you can't know anything that you can't see. And that's just not true. They haven't had the fortune of fortune. And maybe they haven't had the experience of answering that and getting an answer. So they don't know that whole mode of thinking, whole mode of knowing things, which is unfortunate, but it's a part of life. It's meant to be this way, and people are meant to disagree. But the fact remains that you can know that stuff. We talked in our episode, Seek, Knock, and Ask, that you can ask anything you want, and you can know anything. You can know anything. I'm not saying you'll get an answer to everything you ask right away. But what I'm saying is there is not any limit coded in the universe that God is not going to tell you this or not going to tell you that. But there's not anything that you can't ask. So feel free to ask. And sometimes the answer won't come in a direct revelation or a dream or a vision or a voice or whatever. It might come as you study it out in your mind and try to figure things out. That's exactly what we're trying to do here on the podcast. This is something that I've asked about, the principles of psychology, and it's something I believe, you know, God is willing for a person to understand. So we're trying. And when we get the answer, if we haven't already, I feel like there's still some stuff to work out and figure out and think about. But yeah, I'm not sure what happens then. I didn't know what to do about the gravity thing when I felt really excited when I discovered it, or felt like I understood it. And surely I'm not the first one to come to that particular conclusion, but I felt like there are a lot of people who don't probably see things quite that way and don't maybe understand that, which is why people still talk about different theories of gravity, when to me it's like, oh, you don't need these theories of gravity. The one that works is Einstein's, and that's it's great, and there is no gravity, is just acceleration caused by space-time. Are you tired of me saying that? I don't know who else to tell. I talked to a professor at BYU about it, and I guess I didn't feel like I got real far, but I don't feel like you get real far telling professors stuff. That's just my experience. I love what I learn from professors. I love the thought-provoking that happens when I learn from them. I don't have the greatest experience trying to enlighten them on stuff. And maybe I would be the same way if I had felt like I'd studied and figured all this stuff out, and then some punky student came to me and tried to tell me what was what. But it's kind of unfortunate, I guess. I have this view of academia that that is less than, completely reverential. But at the same time, I think it'd be fun to be a college professor. Okay, how about that song, right? Well, this was the Should Be Known podcast. I'm Clayton Pixton. I hate to end it. Clayton Pixton, this is the Should Be Known podcast, episode 14, They Are All Wrong. The title seems a little harsh to me, but sometimes they are. Sometimes all the answers are wrong. You gotta go to the source. You gotta think about it for yourself and go to the source and find the answer. And sometimes all the answers you were thinking about were wrong. You get me? And have a great day.